views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network, the best network on the planet. You should tune in if you're not a regular listener. We are growing leaps and bounds, and we recently won the International Stevie Award for Best Team. Great accomplishments, and there's great content on this network. So keep tuning in to everything that's going on here. But I want to start off with some interesting facts that I found from the Board of Innovation. You can find it too at boardofinnovation.com. Excellent website. But here's some facts that they came up with innovation facts. Okay, fact number one, 95% of new products introduced each year fail. Oh, that's awful. Basically, companies come up with products, but they're not coming up with products that their customers want and address their needs. It's not solving a problem for their customer. It might be something fun to do, but you really need to understand what your customers need. Solving a customer's problem will result in much better results for your products. Just basic 101 of business. Fact number two, 45% of working activities that people are paid for today can be automated by adapting current technologies. Now, this doesn't mean automating full roles. This is parts of roles, you know, things to make you more efficient. Automating ordering processes, yes. Automating customer service, some of that stuff. I think some of that stuff is too automated. The customer calls in and can't get to a regular person. But this is about making your job more efficient and effective. So when we say automating 45% of your work, it's not getting rid of roles as much as automating parts of people's jobs. Okay, fact three, 1 gigabyte of storage in 1993 costs over $9,000. Now it's a mere 4 cents. Can you imagine having a product that went down that much in cost? Well, you need to plan for some of that, especially if you're in that industry, obviously. Otherwise, you wouldn't be around anymore. Fact four, 49% of organizations have initiatives to grow via reducing costs only. 29% have initiatives that grow via new products and services. So the question is, what's healthier? Obviously, you want to do both. You're always striving to reduce costs. Always, 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 always. But not at the expense of behaving ethically and taking care of your people. That's wrong. And you will end up taking yourself under indirectly anyways in the long run. But you should always look for ways to grow, not just by reducing costs, but also by expanding. Because if you're only reducing costs, somebody will eventually innovate around you. And that's not good. Employees average 31 hours a month in unproductive meetings. Meetings, meetings, meetings. How many of you have endless meetings? So you all know what that means. Fact number six. Now, I'm not sure what I think about this fact, but it took Slack, a team collaboration tool, only 15 months to reach a $1 billion valuation. Well, I have a lot of opinions about that because a valuation can depend on, as everybody knows, some of these companies that had no revenue had $1 billion valuations and they were way overvaluated. So even though this might be a fact that's true, you have to be careful on this. However, what I like about this is there are so many people that think small, and you need to figure out how you can think bigger. How can I think bigger and do something? Because I teach an entrepreneur class at the Highly Ready Carlson School at the U of M. And what I notice a lot of times is I have to work to get the students to think broader and bigger. And so this is, it's a great example to do that. Now there are the other side of that. The flip side is there's a lot of venture capitalists and people that always think big. And I think they think too big, grow too fast, and they do destroy their companies that way. So there, it's always a double-edged sword, but most people tend to think too small. Next one, fact seven, 74% of companies believe business complexity hurts to meet goals, but only 17% believe simplification efforts are effective. Basically, simplification, people aren't good at simplifying. Obviously, if things are overcomplicated, it's going to hurt your ability to reach your goals. So you try to simplify, but if people can't think clearly, simplification doesn't work. But you can't not try, obviously. So basically, you get people in there that can think clearly and understand things without things being so mucked up in their brain. It's hard to do, but you got to find those people that are a little smarter to do some of those things. Fact number eight, only 43% of the companies at the top of Fortune 500 in 1995 made the cut in 2015. Well, that's an example of why you don't just reduce costs, but you also need to innovate with new products. You need to do it. I know 95 or 94% or 96, whatever I said at the beginning, fail, but that's because you're not finding the needs of the customers. You can't back out and say everybody fails anyways. No, if for the people that are looking for the customers' needs, the success rate is much higher for innovation. Fact number nine, Google searches for the terms how to reward innovation 6.5 times more results than how to encourage innovation. So people are trying to figure out how to reward it more than they're trying to encourage it. I think people are afraid to encourage it. So we probably need to think differently about that. 10, it takes 21 times before a new type of behavior becomes a routine. Basically, to change habits, it takes you 21 times of doing so. Everybody who tries a diet, I mean, that's the downfall of most people. If you want to change your diet, even if you're healthy in general, you're not overweight, but you need to change your diet because you're eating too many Snickers bars or you're doing some, or you want to exercise more, you can be thin and not fit. That's not the same thing. So let's say you want to create an exercise routine every morning or every afternoon. It takes you 21 times before you turn that into a habit. So just know that you got to create healthy habits, and takes 21 times. Okay, so that's my top 10 facts of the day that I wanted to share with you. Again, that came from the boardofinnovation.com. Excellent website. Today I have a fantastic person coming. Her name is Tamara Chandler, and she is the CEO and co-founder of PeopleFirm, which is one of the Washington State's fastest growing businesses. And her company is consistently ranked as one of the top places to work, both locally in Washington State and nationally. She's won awards nationally. And they not only talk the talk, but they walk their talk. They're a company that looks to increase performance management. How can a company get better at this? And they do other things as well, but this is something that she has focused on recently because she put out a book called How Performance, let me give you the exact wording. It says How Performance Management is Killing Performance and What to Do About It. Basically, performance management is broken. We're sitting in a 1950s work environment, and that's what people are still using to manage people, but it just simply doesn't work. And simply put, by a major consulting firm, they say everyone hates it. Nobody does it well, and it simply doesn't work. In fact, Deloitte has studies that they've done recently that show that only 8% of companies believe their performance management process is highly effective in driving business value, and 58% say it's not an effective use of their time. They just think it's a total waste of their time. I think that a lot of people listening can relate to that. Further, their studies point out that 75% of respondents believe performance is a key issue. Of course it is. And 89% were either in the process of changing their system or were planning to do so within the next 18 months. So we decided to bring on the guru of this stuff, Tamara Chandler, and tell us what is going on here. It's so important for us to be able to perform, but it's just not working. And those 10 facts that I said at the beginning kind of shows you some of the places that we're just not making it. We're not, you know, with so many of the Fortune 500 companies not still in that list, each decade it changes out. There's huge turnover. Obviously, there's companies that are doing it right, and there's other companies that just aren't getting it done. So she's going to share with us what she believes are the 8 fatal flaws of performance management. And she thinks it's time to leave the past behind, and these old school methods of tracking talent are just not cutting it. And she has these 8 fatal flaws to teach people what they're doing wrong, but also how to change it and how to do it better. We also talk about why a work culture based on need to know kills the urge to participate. You know, basically you only tell certain people things they need to know, and it basically kills the environment. How to recruit change champions to support your revamp efforts. How to engage millennial employees, which is always difficult for us, and many other tips that she brings aboard. But we also discuss how do we implement this not only in our business enterprises, but maybe across politics, government, schools, other institutions in society, so we can thrive as a whole, as a country, as a people. How do we implement this in other groups? I mean, basically, anytime there's group people trying to get stuff done, these ideas can be implemented. So now I'm excited to introduce Tamara Chandler to the program. Hi, Tamara. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I am great. I want to talk to you about performance. You are a performance expert, and there's a lot of people not performing out there. And there's a lot of reasons. And a lot of people managing those people that aren't performing. So what is the latest scientific research say about motivation? Why are these people not motivated to do anything?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think for so long, a lot of what we've been doing is focusing on the motivation techniques that really are the lesser careabouts for most people. And a lot of us in this business now really look to a lot of Daniel Pink's research, for example, that talks about autonomy and purpose and mastery being the key things that people really care about. And this is, you know, ensuring that you're talking about a professional organization or someone who is making enough money that they're not really worrying about those basic needs that they have. Once you get past that, when you're trying to motivate people, what people really want to, they really want to be part of something. That's the purpose. Am I connected? Do I feel like the work that I'm doing is contributing to something that's making a difference? They want to be known and recognized for their expertise. That's the mastery. Am I good at what I do? Yeah. Do I feel important? Do I feel like I'm successful day in and day out? And they want the autonomy. And that's a tricky one. That's one I think a lot of organizations get wrong, because they think, well, you know, does that mean we just let people run willy-nilly? Well, no, that's not what that means. What it means is we really need to give people a framework, which ties it again back to the purpose. What are we trying to accomplish and how do you contribute? But then within that framework, give people the freedom and the flexibility to understand how they bring what they're great at and make that, you know, a reality.
So basically, we manage what, kind of at a high level, what their goals, what they're doing, not every detail of how they're doing it.
Exactly.
So what do companies and managers do now that really kills motivation?
Well, you just essentially named one, and that's micromanagement. When we start to really, you know, be looking over people's shoulders, be nitpicking, be saying, hey, you should have done it this way or that way, we really kill that inspiration, we kill the innovation, and we kind of train people to, like, well, I only do what I'm told to do, right? And then later we were like, why are people only doing what we've told them to do? Well, we've kind of trained them to do that.
Because you just yelled at them for doing it a different way. Now everybody's afraid.
Exactly. And oftentimes, you know, when you think about the purpose one, when you look at across that, and we at PeopleFirm, we talk about 5 rings of high performance, and strategy is the top one. And strategy, and you look at all the research, is the number one driver of performance for an organization. And I think a lot of leaders don't understand how important it is to give people that sense of direction. Where are we going? How are they part of it? And, you know, communicate that on an ongoing, reinforced kind of way. And that gets lost a lot. I mean, we think, oh, they know, but they don't really know.
Well, do we do some manipulative things? Because we're kind of the culture right now is anti-management. I mean, we've really come to that.
you know, where people just don't trust, you know, the man, as you call it.
Yeah.
And so when you do get people motivated, what happens is you can kill motivation, I think, by just giving them a glimpse that you're just manipulating them to get to work hard.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's for sure. And if you're not doing any of this in an authentic way, I mean, people are going to sniff that out pretty quickly, right?
So it has to be authentic. Otherwise, exactly. I'm not your slave. I mean, it's kind of that mentality. Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's talk about competition, because competition can be good and bad. But what do you see competition as?
Well, I think you're right. Competition can be good and bad. I prefer to see an organization be focused on a competition that's outside the four walls of the organization, right? If you can unite around, hey, we have a common purpose and we are going against this particular competition, not in a negative way, but just in a way that kind of gets you like excited and going to compete, that's a really great thing. If we create a lot of competition internally, it doesn't take too long before that starts to become really unhealthy. You know, so that a little bit of internal competition is fine. A little bit of, you know, poking each other in the ribs is fine. But if we get to the point where people really feel like, hey, I'm looking at my peer in the seat next to me, and in order for me to succeed, they need to fail, then we're in dangerous territory.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, yeah, that
it's
happens.
It's that delicate balance between really creating a culture of performance and one that kills performance because they're too competitive. It's like right. That in high performance sports, where you're out there to compete hard against a team. So competition mm-hmm. is really fun. But as soon as those athletes stop working together, then you can't compete well. You don't win. You have to be able to work well together in healthy competition, and you're competing hard against other teams. But as soon as you start competing too hard against each other internally to the team, that winning factor to compete hard against other teams start to break down.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I'm not always a big sports analogy person, but in this case, the sports analogy is a great one. And a couple years ago when the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, we actually wrote a paper about it, because if you looked at the way that the coach was leading that team, it was really about how they were going to succeed together. And there wasn't necessarily one superstar. It was all about how they were working together and doing the right things. And that's what we need in corporations, right? We're trying to drive collaboration and innovation and those types of things. So if we set up a competitive environment, we kill those areas.
Or an unhealthy competitive environment. And different people have different roles, right? I mean, you need people with different skill sets. So
yeah, and this ties back sort of to the idea of authenticity, right? So if we get real about who we are as humans, we all understand that we have certain strengths and we have certain weaknesses. And unfortunately, I think, you know, coming out of sort of the era of the man, sort of the industrial era, there was this idea that everybody had to be great at everything. And so if you're trying to assess performance, you're trying to assess every person against all those same attributes. Well, that's sort of silliness. It's like we've created this construct that no one's going to be wildly successful in. And if we can look at the team and start to understand, hey, we all have different strengths. And if we can marry those strengths in the right way and bring them together so people can bring, you know, I'm really great at this, but I'm not so good at that, but you're good at that, so why don't you do it? And, you know, bring that together, then we have a lot more power in the group. And we can be a little more honest with each other, right? Like, I mean, even here, my organization, everyone knows I absolutely hate reading legal documents. I'm suck at them. I don't interpret them right half the time. So I always go to different people and say, help me understand this.
Because you probably go too fast and you're like, oh, God, I can't.
It's all that legalese. I just get like, oh, my gosh, why can't they make this simple?
I want to go fast. Well, and I think that there's a good – you know, so many people get fired because they are lacking one skill, and you get new person in that has that skill. Well, then now they're lacking another skill. And so some organizations go through this churn that's just crazy. It's mm-hmm. like you're never going to be happy with anybody.
And that's always that the grass is greener. Well, that person that's not in the company, they would be better, right? And yeah, we get into crazy spins.
Well, that gets back to, well, we kind of have to look at it holistically and say, okay, we got to look at it as a team here. They might not be good at these things, but we need to just find a compliment for it and stop being dumb.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, can I tell you a little side story?
Go ahead.
Years ago, I saw a speaker, and it's horrible, I don't remember his name. He was from the National Geographic, and he was an inspirational speaker. And I thought, well, this is an interesting choice, a National Geographic photographer as an inspirational speaker. But he talked about what we can learn from nature in how it can influence how we lead and how we run organizations. And one of the stories he talked about was watching the birds fly over the cliffs of Hawaii. And I was recently watching this. I was just on vacation. I was watching birds do this. And he was talking about the difference between soaring and flapping. And when you watch a bird that catches the wing and just is flying, you know, they literally don't have, they just soar with the wind. And it's beautiful and graceful. And then you watch a bird who's like flapping into the wind and trying to go against it. And that to me is such a great analogy related to this idea of our strengths. And if we can find those places where our people can soar, and where is the place that gets back to this mastery? Like, where is the place that you can soar and we can get more out of that? And understand that over here, you're going to flap. So we're going to go find somebody who can soar in that arena. Boy, you know it when you're in it, you know it when you're soaring and you know it when you're flapping. And I think that if we can just get more, you know, true with people about those spaces, we end up with such better conversations and people in a lot happier modes.
Exactly. And I think giving a person a chance to flap a little bit so they can soar.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because you might not soar immediately while you're trying. Everybody has to learn a certain amount of stuff. And I'm telling you, anytime I've done anything new, I flap around a while.
Oh, you're always going to flap around. And you have to give people exactly what you said, the room to do that, right? And know that, hey, it's going to be a little messy for a while.
Exactly. Okay. Well, let's talk about millennials a little bit, because for people in my generation and your generation, sometimes these millennials can be a complete pain in the butt. So how do you deal with these people that are just foreigners and aliens that we love? You know, I have a kid who's a millennial too. Love them.
I have one too. You know, it's an interesting thing, because as we started to look more at the research about the generations, what we're finding is that maybe this generation isn't as crazy as we think they are. They're just young, and we just forgot what we were like when we were young. But the truth is, when you look at what motivates them, it's a lot of the same things we've talked about. But, you know, sometimes they need that extra understanding, the greater context, understanding how they fit in. They want to really contribute something. They want to be part of something. And I think we have to take the time to help them understand how they fit in. And I think the time thing is a big deal. They need more time. They're used to feedback. They're used to social settings where there's instant information all the time. You need to kind of start to think about, for that audience, if that's what they're looking for, how do you provide them more frequency, more frequent touches, more perspective, more connections? Cause that's what they're looking for.
And they need a lot of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't. No, we just don't need as much. We don't want as much. So
right.
Is that the disconnect? Kind of, they need more than we want.
I think that's the disconnect. And often I think that is less generational and more age in many ways.
Well, and they're more idealistic, right? They can go change the world. And we're like, yeah, whatever. No, and that's what makes it so beautiful. I love being around them.
Yeah, how do you capture all that energy? Yeah,
well,
for sure.
That's why younger people are the ones that change the world, because they don't know they can't. And so they go and do it.
Mm-hmm.
We think we can't, so we don't do it. They mm-hmm. think they can, so they do, you know?
Well, and I think the other beautiful thing about them is they are really forcing us to look at some of these old habits we have. And, you know, why do you do that? Why have we done it this way? Why, you know, and I think we need to change a lot of those habits. And so sometimes in our frustration, we need to step back and go, you know, actually, this is really healthy, that they're kind of poking at stuff that probably needs to be poked at.
Oh, absolutely. Well, because they just see it with a fresh new perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that with anybody with a fresh new perspective. Well, you know, maybe they got some points here.
Darn them.
They're just as smart as we are, just less experienced. And that's kind of a good thing a lot of times.
Yeah, absolutely.
We need to take a short break, and we'll be back with Tamara Chandler in a brief moment.
A word of caution. If you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Song of the Heart, Walking the Path of Light, from author and healer Francine Vail, is available now. Through Francine's life story, we learn how imperative it is to love one another. Once this simple truth is learned, peace on earth will prevail. Song of the Heart is a life lived and a story told for this purpose. To learn more about Francine and her amazing gifts, or to order your copy of the book today, visit angelsandlightbeings.com.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests. Tune in to The Michael Shane Show, the third Tuesday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com and connect with the ascended beings to raise your vibration and manifest the life you desire. Get ready to receive healing through the transphysical mediumship of Reverend Michael Shane and the ascended beings. Visit MichaelShane.com. That's M-Y-C-H-A-E-L, Shane.com, and call 425-971-6632 to schedule your full healing session now.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
And we are back. This is Sarah Westall with Business Game Changers. And I want to remind you that we air in New York and Rhode Island and Connecticut. And we're also streaming on multiple channels, including Transformation Talk Radio. And we are playing 6 days a week on Transformation Talk Radio, which I'm excited about. So you can hear me. Got to look for the schedule and you'll be able to hear it replay multiple times during the week. And also, if you want to go to my website at sarahwestall.com, you can hear any of my past podcasts or any of the blogs that I write on the radio show that I do. Each radio show, I write up a description of what's going on and do a blog on it. So lots of cool information there. Once again, sarahwestall.com. And we are talking with Tamara Chandler, and she is giving us some amazing insight on how to get our act together with performance management, how to change the way that we think about this so that our companies, our businesses can thrive, or our institutions can thrive. So let's rejoin that interview now.
Okay, so you say that there's 8 fatal flaws with performance management. And I want you to go through those and explain them to us. And your first one is, what is your first one here?
A theory without evidence is just a bad theory.
Yeah, so what does that mean? That means if you're full of crap, you're full of crap?
Kinda. Well, you know, it's this whole journey in writing the book about performance management started for me with a call from a CHRO at a local company here that I've worked with. And he said, Tamara, I need a white paper for my leaders. We're getting ready to redesign performance management, and they're researchers, they're scientists, they're super busy. It needs to be fact-based. It needs to be quick. It needs to be all those things. But hey, can you please answer this question for me? Can you help me understand how performance management, as in the traditional model that we've done, you know, the annual reviews, the feedback forms, the ratings, all that stuff, how does that actually drive performance? And when James asked me that question, I thought, well, we should be able to answer that question. And what was so interesting, Sarah, as we started to really dig into it, what we realized is you can't actually link the process of performance management to an increase in performance. What you can link is increased engagement to performance. There is a ton of research, Gallup's done a bunch, that shows the causal relationship to the more we're engaged as employees, the better our company performs.
Then there's more passion.
Yeah, there's more passion and people work harder. They put more into it. They care more. You know, so that drives performance. So then you'd say, okay, well, then if we can connect performance management to engagement, then we've got something, right? Because we can sort of hop, skip from performance management to performance. But that's where the problem breaks down. Because when we look at performance management, we can't actually tie it to engagement. In fact, there's a lot of research that says for many people, performance management, the way that we're doing it today in the traditional sense of the word, is actually driving disengagement.
Yeah, we're doing the opposite.
We're doing the opposite.
We're micromanaging performance, and that bugs people.
So that's flaw number one, is this idea that we're thinking that this process that we're doing is actually having the outcome that we want and driving performance. And so we need to sort of step back and look at the whole process.
Okay. Well, your flaw number two is nobody really opens up with the person who pokes them in the eye. You know, if you're going to kick my butt, I'm not going to tell you what you know, you're going to kick my butt over what I tell you. So I'm not going to tell you.
Well, traditional performance management typically has an annual review in the cycle. And maybe there's a mid-year touch base with the manager, but usually it all boils down to this one big meeting, right? That the employee maybe wrote a self-review. They're coming to the table. The manager's written a review, and they're supposed to sit down and have this career development performance conversation all boiled in this, you know, 60 minutes or whatever the time allocation has been set. Well, the problem with that is that any employee knows that coming into that meeting, I need to be at my best. I need to make the best case, because whatever the outcome of that meeting is, it's going to influence my promotion, the projects I get, my pay. There's all sorts of implications of this down the line. So I'm not coming to that meeting as an employee with an open mind and authentic, hey, I really want to have a great conversation about my career, my contributions, and those types of things. You're really coming in to negotiate how you performed in order to drive those outcomes you need.
Or now, you're coming in just to get through it, right? Oh, God, it's performance review time. How do I get through this?
And the manager is coming to the table oftentimes with their own agenda, because maybe they have a limited amount of budget. Maybe they only can make so what happens is you have this meeting that becomes really a really unauthentic negotiation between two people trying to drive to some kind of outcome. And what gets lost in it is what we've really wanted to this to be. We've lost the idea of how do we help people develop. We've lost the idea of how do we connect them to the organization. All that gets lost, and it becomes much more of a...
So what do you do instead of that?
Well, there's lots of things we can do instead of that. It's getting back to starting to think about what is it we're trying to accomplish. And that's one of the first questions we ask any client around performance management. What are you trying to do? Is this a development conversation? Is this truly just trying to assess someone's compensation or reward philosophy? Is this about helping them connect to the goals and strategy of the company? And so, you know, we've got three goals of performance management. And the problem is we've tried to answer all three of those in this one meeting. So what
could be done differently.
Exactly. So to me, that's why if you looked at the book cover, there's this knot on the front of it. And we say, abandon the knotted solution. It's like, start to pull it apart. What do we want to do? What are we trying to do? And then how would we solve for each of those things independently versus bundle it all in this one crazy meeting? Through this one.
That just doesn't get any agenda done. Okay. So nobody remembers the good work. So what do you mean by that?
Well, this is the sad fatal flaw, right? That we as humans just tend to be negative. We, you know, 65% of our descriptive words are negative words. We tend to remember the thing that the person did wrong. We don't tend to remember the thing that they did right. And in Western cultures, particularly, we were raised with the idea that the way you make someone better is you tell them what they did wrong. Which actually, if you read David Rock or any of the neuroscientists, will tell you, no, that's not actually how you make people perform better. You tell them what they did right and figure out how they can do more of that, or how they can build more capability around the skills and the strengths that they have.
Well, I know that in coaching, because I've coached a ton. I've coached for 15 mm-hmm. years. The coaching part with sports is that you want to sandwich any negative with positives. So if you are going to get constructively negative, you need to make sure you're talking about positive 2-to-1 ratio, mm-hmm. at least.
I heard, it's funny, the sports analogy, but I heard a great story in one of the presentations I was in the other day, where one of the members of the audience shared a story about a coach where a kid wasn't really, it was basketball and they weren't, you know, they really weren't performing very well and they were hogging the ball and they just weren't up to what they should be doing. And the coach pulled the player off the side and said, look, you're too good of a player to be doing the things you're doing. And so when you say it in that manner, what you're doing is you're giving them the confidence that, hey, look, you have these capabilities and you're not using them to the best of your ability versus, you know, saying, hey, you got to quit being such a jerk and, you know,
yeah, you're this and that and you're bad and everybody. Yeah.
Right.
And then, you come out of there feeling like you're the worst person on the planet.
Well, and here's the really, really sad thing about fatal flaw number three is even a lot of your strong performers leave the performance management process feeling badly.
Yeah, they feel like they're awful when actually they're superstar.
Yeah, and you talk to a lot of managers and they'll say, oh, that was, you know, I gave them a great review. And you talk to the person, they're like, that was horrible.
Well, and don't you think that as somebody who is a superstar, if they hear a negative, that's all they hear?
Right.
Because they're so geared to perform and to please. A lot of people are, you know, aimed at pleasing or really performing and shining. And so if they think they're not shining, it's just demoralizing.
They're your type A personalities, right? They want to be great. They want to be loved. And yeah, they can't, it's very difficult for them to absorb that feedback. You know, and then the worst of all is if you get into organizations who are ranking people, because I always say, you know, who's the only person that's going to leave a ranking process who's happy is going to be number one.
Yeah, everybody else feels like crap.
Yeah, even number two is going to feel like crap, right? Like, why am I not number one?
Doesn't that get back to competition? Now, that's the unhealthy competition.
Exactly.
And you have to rank different skill sets. Okay, we just got done talking about people having different roles. Well, why are you ranking things wrong? So such and such might be number one in this particular skill set, and the other person's number one in this skill set, but yet you're valuing different skills over different skills. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Okay, so we are not machines.
So we are not machines.
We're not a cog in a system. They used to talk with that language.
So this one really gets to this where we were going with this idea of ratings or rankings. The idea that we as humans can assess people and attribute a number to them and do that fairly is a complete fallacy. We can't. And part of that is that we are extremely biased as humans. We're biased for all different reasons, and we mean the best, but you know, we like people that look more like us. We like people that do things the way we do. We may have a recency bias where, hey, you just did something recently that I loved. And so I like you right now. And I, you know, the person who did something great for me 3 months ago, I've forgotten about. But there's all sorts of problems in that we're trying to assess the performance of somebody and do a fair rating. And one of them that you mentioned is huge is that we're trying to often compare people who are doing completely different jobs. So I'm going to compare 10 people who are doing 10 different roles and come up with some rating or ranking system that I think is fair and equitable across that group. It's just humanly not possible. But yet we like it because it mechanizes, it feels like somehow we're creating a valid system because we're putting numbers to people and that feels better for us.
You were creating this scientific system of BS. That's if the theory's bad, that's bad.
Right. There's a factor called the idiosyncratic effect. And with the idiosyncratic effect, it's a researched, proven out, theory, I guess, that if I was to rate you, Sarah, 60% or more of what I am attributing to you is about me. So it's sort of like when you have an easy grader versus a hard grading teacher, right? You're the same person, but because these teachers have different constructs and frameworks, they see you differently. And that's the problem. When you actually look at how we assess somebody's performance, in the end, only about 20, 25% about it is really their performance. And the rest is all about other factors.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, and this relates to businesses where I get frustrated when I feel like I'm getting service from a business, but it's a McDonald's drive-through. It's a high-end, so, you know, like a legal service or whatever, and they're putting me through a McDonald's drive-through. Mm-hmm. And it's more complicated than that. And I think it's the same thing. And when you start to mechanize everything in a company, people start feeling really devalued because they feel like they're just in some like process and you're shoving them through a McDonald's drive-thru for everything.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing here. Like, performance management is about humans. It's a human process, and we've tried to mechanize it and take the humanity out of it, which is crazy. We need to put the humanity into it. And it's a little messy, and it's never going to be perfect, but we just need to recognize that's what it is.
Okay, so let's move on to let me introduce you to your competition. Now, play nice together.
Yeah, so this goes back to what you and I have already talked about, this idea of the internal competition. If we've created an organization that has a lot of that, then we lose all the things we're trying to drive around a collaborative culture and innovative culture and all of that.
You can't compete with the external because you're so busy competing with each other.
Yeah. And again, to that idea of authenticity, if you're telling your employees, look, we want this, you know, collaborative, innovative environment. And oh, by the way, at the end of the year, we're going to stack rank you. They're going to look at you and say, you don't really want a collaborative, innovative environment.
Yeah, you're full of crap. And that's what happens. That's what happens so much is they talk out of one side of their mouth and then they do something else. And people start to read actions. And that's the problem, too, is you might have a really good management, some really good managers who really are authentic. And then you have a couple that are bad who mess it up. And so that's the challenge.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, your last one is we are not Pavlov's dog. I like that.
Well, and this gets into the idea of some of the core philosophies that we've been using to build performance management processes are not true. And so when we look at motivation, back to the first question you asked me, what motivates people, money is rarely the thing that is going to really drive someone's motivation. And particularly when it becomes something that is a merit increase that happens once a year. So I don't show up on Wednesday because I know in 7 months down the line, I'm going to get a 0.1% or 0.5% or whatever the increase is, better than someone else because I showed up better on Wednesday. We don't translate it that way. What we really care about are the intrinsic things that we talked about earlier, the purpose, the mastery, being part of something. Extrinsic rewards can work when it's very hard-coded, like in a sales environment. You do X, you get Y. That will motivate someone. But for most professionals, for most salaried individuals, they're not looking at their annual compensation increase and making a judgment on their performance on how much they're going to weigh in because they think it's going to have an impact.
So people just need to figure out what motivates people and what typically, let's recap. You said at the beginning, but let's recap now. What are the motivations for people now that we've talked about all these fatal flaws and some of the issues?
Yeah, so I talked about the idea of purpose, mastery, and autonomy. And when you translate that into performance management, into conversations about career development, it really is having a strong connection to where we're going as an organization. So is your performance management process connecting you to the organization's strategy and direction? It is about my career and my development. And so are you having strong development conversations that are helping people realize what they're great at, where they could provide, you know, give more value, how they could build onto that, and how you can help them grow in their capabilities and their strengths. And then finally, we do need to reward people, but we need to recognize that we often rewards aren't always that, you know, a 1% more increase in your base comp, but they may be the great project that you got, or I got to go on a field assignment into a location that I would never have had that experience to do. We need to think of total rewards in a much more holistic way, but tied back to those ideas of motivation.
You have another topic that you talk about with work culture where, and this happens a lot in today's age, where the need to know concept is out there. Like if you don't need to know, they don't tell you, thinking that, you know, the strategy thing or numbers. How does that kill participation? And is it sometimes healthy for need to know to exist?
I'm probably on the extreme of I think that the more information you can share with people, the better. I think that to try to figure out what information is valuable to one person or another is a very difficult thing to do. And too often, if we go towards the we share less versus more, that gets us in trouble because people will fill in the blanks on stuff that they don't know. Right. Or they'll make bad assumptions based on what they don't know, or they'll become suspicious and distrustful because you're not sharing information with them.
Or they're more important than we are kind of concept.
Yeah, that just
kills it.
Totally. Totally. And, you know, people, the more information people have, I mean, I believe a lot in people, and I think the more information they have, the better the insights that they can bring. And you may get value from a corner you never expected when someone can engage in a way that, is more thoughtful because they have more information to work with.
Well, with business and the world changing so much, my whole radio show is about change, right? Mm-hmm. It's about how the world is changing. What's the edge of innovation? You know, what's disruption? All these things. What do you need to bring in a change champion, you call it, recruiting change champions? Because is there a different concept with that? Do people think differently? I mean, what is that all about?
Well, we write about the change champions in the sense of if you're going to change this performance management process. And one of the things I talk about first is you have to lead the leaders, to start with, right? Because they have to be your change champions first and foremost. If you don't have an executive team and a group that is supportive and understanding of this, you're really going to struggle. And unfortunately, what I see too many people do is back away from educating those executive leaders. They're a little bit scared to tell them, look, you don't really know, or that the ideas that you've used for your whole 30 years of your career actually don't hold water. And you don't need to tell them that.
But that's the habits that they just think, you know, the same concept with millennials, we just won't accept that. And so they're going to come in with kind of a wall up, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, they have 30 years of experience thinking they know what they're doing.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, I say you've got to lead the leaders. You've got to spend the time and if you have an organization that's leaders are still kind of far away from these ideas, it's probably going to take some time to help bring the science in, bring the data in, help them understand why there's a better way to help people build their careers, to manage performance and those types of things. So you have to definitely start there. But I also think that you need to look at across the organization and say, who are the other champions out there who can help us advocate, can help us connect these ideas, both with the leaders and with our employees. And so that's when we talk about the change champions, we're really saying, who's that group that's going to help you bring these ideas, listen to the organization, feed that information back to you, and help you move the organization in a forward way so you really can change the way that you're working.
Now, where else can these ideas be implemented besides in a business? I mean, I don't know if you've thought about that, but, you know, how can we implement some of this stuff widely, society-wise? How does it – have you thought out of the box like that, you know?
I think that these core ideas are so human, they can be used in anywhere. I mean, you could even take them into politics, right? It's about authenticity and transparency and giving people information.
Well, that's our problem right now. Nobody believes any of the politicians.
Right. You know, so I think the underlying ideas, play in so many environments. So related to, you know, how these ideas can translate to other locations or other constructs or other environments, I think it can go back to two of the fundamental concepts that I start the book with, is the idea of customization and trust. And if we can create environments of trust where, you know, as we've talked about, it's authentic. We trust our employees. We trust them to make good decisions. We give them the information that they need to make those decisions. And we put a lot more energy into that. That is very powerful. And then the idea of customization, we haven't really talked about too much, but we really need to understand that one environment to the other, one country to another, one person to the other, we're all different. And if we can create solutions, whether it's performance management or anything else in today's world, that really takes that uniqueness and individuality into account, it's so much more powerful, because then we can start to create solutions that can be absorbed and grabbed by the people who need them and help them with what they need. And that's, you know, gets back to the idea of a millennial versus a Gen Xer or a baby boomer. They need different things. So why not build solutions that are flexible and can meet those different needs of those different humans.
And it's getting past the whole tribe mentality, right? Where we're warring with each other. We start to be more sophisticated in how we think about each other.
Yeah. It's letting go of control, because oftentimes we think that consistency is control, but it's not really.
No, it's just you forcing your will on somebody and then they leave and then they leave and you get or they stay and you get like very, very poor performance,
which can be even worse, right?
Exactly. That's great. So how can people get your book and learn more about you? You have so many fascinating things going on.
Oh, well, thank you so much. We have had a lot of fun here. Well, one way to do both of those things is to come to our site, which is www.peoplefirm.com. And there's links there that take you to where you can buy the book, or you can go directly to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or a lot of your typical retailers and find the book there as well. We also have a lot of other content on the site. We love to be sharing our ideas and thoughts with people. So I'd highly encourage people to go to the PM or to peoplefirm.com.
We have a good blog going.
Yeah, we do.
Oh,
we got,
awesome.
We got some information. We have what we call postcards we send out, you know, and it's really in the vein of what you're talking about, Sarah. It's just the world has changed, and how do we have to think about how we change the way we work in the changed world?
Well, and can I put this up on the radio page? I'll put links to that and information on how to get a hold of you, and we can go from there.
That would be great.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Appreciate it. Had a great time.
Well, that's it for today for Business Game Changers. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Tamara Chandler, and I hope you have time to check out her book. Again, it's How Performance Management is Killing Performance and What to Do About It. And I believe you can get it at where all fine books are sold, as they say. So again, you can go to her website too at peoplefirm.com. And if you want to get more information again about their company, come to my website at sarahwestall.com, and I will have a link to all their stuff. So for now, I hope everyone has a great day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific Time. And learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.